This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. In the wake of a lot of uncertainty, many people have more questions than answers about what the next few weeks, if not longer, will look like for themselves and their families. Some communities have shown incredible efforts to help one another through this time, but when there are true limitations on how much we can interact with one another, it takes some creativity to provide relief and aid to those who need it most. We're joined now by Sean Webster, the president of the Indy Independent Relief Fund, to talk about one of those creative solutions. Sean, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure to be here. I wasn't doing anything else anyway.
Well, you work in the food and beverage industry, so I guess that's the case. And that sector has been one that was hit hardest and fastest by the pandemic. What's this been like for your industry?
You know, it's not just the food and beverage. I think that's a huge misconception about what's going on right now. It's the entire service industry. You know, yeah, the bartenders, the servers, I love them. I was a bartender for many years, but I mean, you have to think about the entertainers. You got to think about even back of house guys. People don't think about the kitchen. They don't think about, I mean, even like the drag queens. There's been tons of drag brunches and things going on. So it's a huge issue right now. And I think the biggest issue is that there wasn't much of any notice given to any of the bars and restaurants, which all these people have different ties to, including my business, Monon Beverage, which had to pause all the contracts pretty much immediately.
Yeah. So how were you affected by that?
Massively. I mean, it's it was one of those things where, you know, kind of one day I'm employed and then the next I have zero income coming in because there was no notice and everything shut down, or less shut down and more just changed the rules. And I mean, the rules are changing every day now, and it's very interesting to watch. And I think everyone's pivoting so positively. I love seeing all the different carry out. I love the community support that they're giving the restaurants. I think that's wonderful. Now more than ever, I mean, you can't just drive past a place and go, oh, yeah, we should try that sometime. It's you drive past, you go, yeah, we're going there this week. Now you aren't going to get the chance to try some places because this is testing people, really pushing them past their limits. And it's very tough to watch.
When did you know you wanted to do something?
Man, I spent a few days being kind of crappy about everything going on and not doing too much. But that's really not who I am as a person to kind of move around. So I, it was a Thursday morning, on the 19th, I believe. I woke up and I was like, man, I got to do something. And I'm getting my coffee. I'm getting dressed because I just wanted to like get up and be somewhat productive. And it's like, oh, I wonder if anyone's making a relief beer or doing something to take care of our industry. And so I called my buddy Mark at Indiana on Tap, and they do a lot of great work for the industry, a lot of events, a lot of reporting what's going on. So check them out. But I was like, hey, Mark, got this weird idea. I'm thinking about making a relief beer. Have you heard of anyone doing it? And he was quiet. He's like, no, I don't think so. So I just hung up on him and got going. there was less warning. It was kind of like, all right, let's do this. Let's go. So then I called a buddy, one of the owners of Centerpoint, John. And I was like, hey, man, I know you just laid everyone off. I have a crazy idea. Hear me out real quick. And you can totally say no. No one will be upset. No love lost. I was like, John, I want to make a beer and give all the money back to a charity and try and help these bartenders out. And without hesitation, I mean, this man just laid his entire team off. He's like, yeah, let's do it. Let's go. So in moments, this thing starts rolling full speed. His team fully jumped on board. I mean, all these people that were just laid off were like, yeah, let's get to work. Let's go. This is great. Let's do this. So start moving, and within 24 hours of that phone call, we had everything we needed donated to us, and we had a beer being brewed in less than 24 hours. And that's such a crazy quick turnaround, because normally, I mean, there's more planning, there's so much that goes into it, but you know, everything was donated, and we're able from this batch, we're going to call it social distance. We're going to raise $9,000 just in sales based on everyone's awesome donations.
But where can we get it? Like, where? How are you getting the money? Because people aren't going out. We have a stay-at-home order right now.
Oh, you can get carry-out, though, from restaurants, because restaurants are essential, apparently.
Ah, yeah. Well, I suppose so. Is this being bottled and sold at liquor stores? How are you able to get this all done so quickly?
Great. So what's really great is, you know, there's so many people helping out with this project right now. You know, all the donations that came from Fountain Square and Ideal Canning, Sugar Creek Malt, Royal Box, Sun King, Daredevil, Indie Highbinds, like all these guys, they all threw effort in to help this out. And really what we're doing now is we're pre-selling everything. And instead of telling you where you can get it, I'm going to put it on you real quick and say, you know, where do you like to go and get food? Where is somewhere in your neighborhood still doing carry out or curbside? And let us sell a case to them. We will call them up. We'll get a case in there for you. So while you're going there to buy dinner, buy lunch, buy whatever, hey, we'll have beer there for you. We'll get you, because right now you can get carry out from most all venues as long as they have the original permit to sell in-house.
So here's a question. What's the advantage of a relief fund, which is what you're working with, over, say, a GoFundMe?
Great. I think GoFundMes are very just reactive, and I'm being very proactive right now. So immediately, man, I'm just trying to help out. You know, there's a list of Venmo for all the service industry people that have their name on it. It's up to about 3,000 service industry people, and that's heartbreaking. GoFundMe seemed like such a, all right, this happened. Now we need money. Let's figure it out. Let's hopefully our community supports us. The relief fund I started, so it's registered as a nonprofit. I'm working on so many things around it to make it more established. We have a webpage coming up. I'm having some help from other 501c3s to help me get this a bit more bigger and larger than what I could have imagined. But the goal of this is, you know, I'm always going to have some sort of, you know, event where it's like dine out and X percent comes back to the fund, or, you know, X beer release and X percent comes back to the fund. And if something happens, you know, like if there's a fire that damages a brewery, if there's a bartender that dies, instead of their families having to start a GoFundMe during this terrible time, just look at the fund. Like, how can we help you? What do you need to make it? You know, what are the funeral costs? Let's take care of this. So the long term is, let's have a fund and take care of people that take care of us. I mean, that's the tagline of the Indie Independent Relief Fund, is to serve those who serve us. It's such a needed thing, because there hasn't been a fund. And so too often you see a GoFundMe, and man, good for GoFundMe. Like, it's been great for people, but I feel like there's such a more better use of people's time than, you know, like I said, if there's a death, if there's a fire, than trying to do a GoFundMe. So this is more proactive stance versus just like, oh shoot, we need money now.
Yeah. And so we're talking about helping people who live on tips, and people who are completely out of work right now, bartenders, servers. But are there other people in the industry that we need to make sure we're thinking of as well?
Yeah, you know, I mentioned a little earlier, the sound, like the sound technicians for big concert venues, the entertainers, tattoo artists are now, I believe, they're non-essential, hairstylists are non-essential. I mean, there's so many people that you don't automatically assume. And, you know, I was talking to a buddy about this, and he stopped me real quick, because originally when I was presenting this concept, I was like, yeah, there's so many bartenders and servers out of work. And he stopped me real quick. He's like, nope. You're wrong. Like, yeah, they are, but you have to look at the bigger service industry picture. There's so many people that, you know, their income is based on people coming to shows. And I mean, I even mentioned like drag performers. Like, there's so many different drag events, and they need tips, and there's artists, there's musicians, even the back end people. You know, you could even say, hey, you know, what about theatrical people? I know, yeah, there's just so many people that are suffering from this pandemic going on right now. And the initial is, yes, we're going to raise money on this beer. I'm still talking to a few people to see how we can stretch that amount into a larger sum so we can provide food and supplies to people. But then long term, it's, let's always have a fund. Let's have a board of different people from different service industries, so we can kind of keep each other in check, also help identify things much bigger than just, you know, my background of food and beverage. You know, let's work with someone that does sound. Let's work with someone that does hair. Let's work with, you know, a tattoo artist, even. You know, all these people are so important, and I think it's overlooked sometimes, but with everything going on right now, we see just how important it is to support local. And it's huge. So, I mean, if I can do something small and have a fund where I can constantly be growing it and take care of people that take care of us, I mean, to serve those who serve us, that's it.
Let's talk about the beer. I'm a big fan of beer. I will drink anything that more than one person considers beer. And what it's called social distancing, and it is a product of the Indy Independent Relief Fund brewed by Centerpoint. What kind of beer is it?
So it's a pale ale. It was pretty much an inventory clearing out recipe where it was like, wow, cool. We got less than 24 hours. We were able to get some grain and malt from Sugar Creek Hop. We were able to get Sugar Creek Malt. We were able to get hops from Indy High Binds. And so Sun King provided some yeast. I mean, we had so many people come together really quickly to say, yeah, here you go, here you go. We'll supplement what you already have. And at the end of the day, it'll be a good pale ale. There'll be some citra hop in it. There'll be some lemon drop hop. It was fun. I got to be there that morning. I hung out with those guys for a little bit. The brew team at Centerpoint, I mean, I go way back with those guys. I mean, it's this industry. We've been around each other for so long. We've been around in different aspects. So, you know, it's fun to still be around them and be like, wow, these are people that have been friends for 10 years. And now we're coming together when no one really has anything to give, but everyone's finding, they're finding gaps where they're like, yeah, I have this. I can supply this. I can help you out with this. So just a nice, easy drinking pale ale. That's the goal. Not going to be too hoppy. It should be very palatable. I'm excited for it. Centerpoint's never done wrong, in my opinion. Maybe when they were younger and first starting out, they did wrong, but they haven't done wrong in the past years. So it's all good.
Sean Webster is president of the Indy Independent Relief Fund, who is releasing a beer called Social Distancing and using the funds to go toward people who need it right now, which is quite a few people in the service industry. And thank you so much, Sean, for joining us today. We're wishing you the best.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I mean, definitely follow us on social media. Keep up with us. You know, if you're looking to find the beer, feel free to message us on social media at the Indy Independent Relief Fund. We have it on Facebook. Even feel free to email me. I am more than happy to talk to you. I'll even talk to you on the phone. I'm more than happy to talk about this project with anyone who wants to hear about it. So, yeah, thanks for listening today.
All right. When we come back, we'll hear more examples of how folks across Indiana have gone out of their way to help out their neighborhoods and communities, from the creation of a food train that helps to provide needed meals to online concerts providing needed smiles. And we'll have more stories of Hoosiers thinking outside the box and helping each other when we most need it. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back with that in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back now with some previously recorded conversations highlighting community relief efforts right now. For students across the state, school closures mean more than just distance from the classroom. For many, it means losing the guarantee of a daily meal, if not more. Schools across the state are working to continue providing meals as they can, but to help fill in the gaps, community members have offered assistance as well. Joining me now is the chair of the Monroe County Women's Commission, Nichelle Whitney. Nichelle, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So when you heard about schools closing in Monroe County, one of your first thoughts was whether or not students were going to continue to have access to meals. What was going through your mind?
Well, the first thing that went through my mind is if that had been me as a student, which at one point it was, I relied very heavily on breakfast and lunch to be provided by the school. And so I immediately thought back to what that experience was like for me and for my siblings. I have five brothers, so we're a large family. And I had to just kind of take pause and think about the students here in Monroe County that would feel that same way. So I immediately was like, I got to figure something out.
So what you're doing is a food train, so to speak. How does it work?
Well, on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 12:30 to 2 o'clock, we have volunteer drivers that literally load food into their cars and they go out into the communities and deliver meals. And so typically what happens is they pull into a central location within the community and families come and grab their meal from their vehicle and they go. So we're not doing this in an enclosed area, we do monitor very closely to make sure that we have less than 5 people at a vehicle at a time. All of our drivers know that we sanitize and disinfect vehicles. They're gloved up. Some of them even wear masks as precaution. So we are practicing safe social distancing, but we're also making sure that families can come and get what they need.
And schools were among the first, you know, groups to close, you know, because there's a high concentration of students. And so schools have been closed for a few weeks now. And so the food train has been running for the last 2 weeks. How's it been going?
It has been going extremely well. And to be quite honest, I'm surprised that it's even going as well as it has gone. So we partnered with nearly a dozen restaurants that were providing hot and cold meals for our families. To date, we've given out just over 1,000 meals. We've only ran this for 4 days, but we've given out over 1,000 warm meals. And then we've also given out over 400 bags of groceries. And so that has been huge. Like, I mean, the demand that is in these communities is immense. And the first day that we ran the food train, things were a little bit slower. We had families trickle in maybe at 6 of the 10 locations. So anything that was left over, we donated to the Wheeler Mission. Yesterday was insane. We had families lined up at locations before our drivers even arrived on site. I think 4 of my 11 locations ran out of food before 12:40 p.m. Okay. And even as part of my role while the food train is running, is I have food, excess food in a van, and I caravan to all of the different locations and restock them. So you can imagine for me trying to restock 4 locations in a matter of 10 minutes with the food train starting. It was a great problem to have.
Well, and you said you're working with restaurants, but this is really taking a toll on that industry. How were they able to help?
So initially, before things continued to unfold the way that they have as far as the governor remarks and then also issuing the stay-at-home orders, restaurants were hopeful that they were going to be able to stay open, right? So it was not necessarily a problem for them to continue donating meals. We had some restaurants donate upwards of 50 meals a day, others closer to 100 meals a day. And some could only do 15 or 20 meals, but that still was absolutely helpful. So we weren't quite planning on them to go out of business so soon. What I'm thankful for is that when we set this food train up, initially we were only planning on running until March 26th. And that's because the initial response from the district was that the students would be out of school until March 27th. So the restaurants were able to jump on board and provide for us for those 2 weeks. What we've seen now, since our students are now going to be out of school until May 1st, restaurants, you're absolutely right, they're losing business, they're laying off staff, they just don't have the capacity to continue serving. So we've lost a number of our restaurant partners, but we see that the need is still there for the food train to keep running. So we're now trying to pivot into collecting more non-perishable items, bagging more groceries, and operating from that model rather than the partnerships with the restaurants. One thing I can say, though, is it was very easy to get the restaurants in this community on board. I think I probably put out my first smoke signal that I wanted to do something around 7 p.m. on a Thursday night. By noon on Friday, we already had 7 restaurant partners that were ready to go and ready to donate the following week. But then we had people across Indiana University. So I work at Indiana University. I mentioned that a little bit earlier. We had one of our partners within the Kelly School of Business, their Office of Diversity Initiatives. I called their director and said, "Hey, Carmen, you know, we're in need. We need support. You guys are a community-facing office. You really pride yourselves on being in the community and serving the community and building relationships with the community. Can you partner with us?" And I'm telling you, within moments, Carmen had made a significant contribution to our team that allowed us to even be able to purchase the non-perishable food items. So there are just a number of people that came together based off of just pure relationship building and a heart to serve that was able to get this initiative up and running in less than 24 hours.
Wow. But right now, people are being told to stay home, and a lot of people are following that order. Is that making it a challenge to get delivery volunteers?
So no, and I'm surprised by that. Everyone who's been volunteering, they know that we're all assuming a risk. They know that we are all practicing social distancing and really a social responsibility to take care of ourselves and our neighbors. We know that. We know that there's a risk that comes with this work, but quite frankly, the benefits that we get from it, feeding those children, those families, that is what is most important. And if I can just share a story of things that are happening in addition to food distribution while we're doing this food train.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
So we were leaving one of our locations on the west side of town. And as we were leaving, we were driving past a home and we saw kids outside playing. And it really just hit us that kids, their schedules, their lives have been disrupted by this. The social anxiety that's coming from this, the isolation that's coming from this. We know that some kids who use school to get away from family and life circumstances are now put back into those environments. So we were driving down the street and we saw these kids playing outside and they had, I mean, it was a great innovation. They had hooked bungee cords from one apartment window up on the second level to another apartment window on the second level. And they had attached like a cleaning bucket, a pail, and they were shooting a soccer ball into this bucket. That was their basketball court. I don't know if you can imagine that, but that's what the kids were doing in the little piece of front yard that they had. And so one of my key partners who has been an amazing resource for this entire initiative. Her name is Shatoya Moss. She's the director of Safe and Civil City for the city of Bloomington. So she's been doing the ride-alongs with me. She's been distributing the food. She sees these kids and she goes, you know we have to buy them a basketball court, right? And I'm like, yeah, I do. I'm like, do you want to do it now? And she's like, absolutely. So now, mind you, we're riding around in this marked church van, okay? We go to the nearest Walmart. We purchase this basketball court. We bring it back to this community and this family. We give them food. And as we're talking to the children, and so they have no idea that there's a basketball court waiting for them in this van. We're talking to the family. We're learning more about their challenges. And mom is working from home and working remotely, but she doesn't have the privilege of not being on call. She works for a call center. So she's constantly on the phone, and they have a family of five children. And so, I mean, they were just sharing all of what COVID-19 has done to disrupt their family. And so the young boy that was outside playing basketball, he eventually shares that particular day is his birthday. So we were able to gift him a basketball court in addition to food and groceries on his birthday. The look on his face and his sibling's face in that moment nearly brought Shatoya and I to tears, because that's what this meal train is doing. It's going beyond just providing meals to people. It's giving hope to people. It's bringing joy to families. It's giving them a sense of security. When our volunteer drivers show up in their communities, they are excited. They are energetic. They know that we're putting ourselves at risk, but they are still committed to serving, and that type of energy is contagious throughout the community. So while I'm grateful for what we've been able to do with the food, I tell all of our volunteers and our partners, this is so much bigger than a meal. It is feeding so much more than our physical flesh. It is feeding like our mind and our spirit and our energy during these very uncertain times.
Nichelle Whitney is chair of the Monroe County Women's Commission. Nichelle, thanks so much for spending some time with us today, and thanks for all your efforts.
Thank you for having us.
Another concern that we've been hearing in the midst of the pandemic is for those who need medical care unrelated to the coronavirus. When supplies like hand sanitizer, ventilators, and masks are in short supply, that applies to doctors, nurses, and patients across the board. We're speaking with the executive director of Chemo Buddies, Gail Knight Williams in Evansville, Indiana. She joins us now to talk about how a shortage of masks is affecting cancer patients going through chemo and the efforts that are underway to get more in the hands of those who need them. Gail, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Oh, thank you. It's very important for people to know the vulnerability of those patients who are out there receiving chemotherapy and how important it is for them to have a mask. And what we're trying to do is we are trying, Chemo Buddies itself is on a hiatus, of course, because of not being allowed in the hospitals. But that doesn't mean we don't care for our patients in the same way. So we see between 250 and 270 patients a day, and that's more than 1,000 a week. So we are trying to gather together at least 4,000 mask for individual patients that we see over the course of a month. And hopefully we'll gather as many as 8,000 so their care provider can also have a mask.
And so during normal times, what does Chemo Buddies do? Can you introduce us?
Yes, I'd certainly love to. Chemo Buddies is an organization that is very unique. It was founded in 2011 by our founder, Jill Kincaid. She had experienced chemo with her sister, Karen, who passed away in 2011. They decided that, chemo really took an emotional toll on people in treatment, and particularly on those patients who sat by themselves and were silent or tethered to an IV for hours and hours. In 2011, Jill founded Chemo Buddies, which is an organization that is run by volunteers that are trained and spend time in the treatment rooms with patients receiving chemotherapy. They provide companionship. They perform small tasks. They ensure they're comfortable. Whatever is needed, they're like the nurse's right arm. And we are one of the only organizations that we know of in the country that are allowed to do this in the infusion treatment rooms right now.
And so the coronavirus, I'd imagine, has really impacted things. Like you said, you're on hiatus because of social distancing rules, right? And these patients are immunocompromised in a way.
That is exactly right. And, they're letting us know it is a big burden on the nurses to have to care for all these patients at one time. I mean, can you imagine seeing 250 to 270 patients a day throughout our facilities here in Evansville? You know, we're in six different facilities here in the area. And these people have to come for chemo. They can't delay it. They have to get out. They have to have masks. They have to have the preventative things that, you know, normal people wouldn't even think of, or maybe they would, of course, a face mask. But these people are so vulnerable, we want to make sure that they're taken care of.
So the concern, of course, is that the shortages of supplies are going to affect the people with health conditions that are not related to the virus whatsoever. So how can people help then right now? What is it that you need?
Well, we have posted on the Chemo Buddies website a pattern for making the material mask. And it's very simple and very easy. It requires to have cotton material, some flannel material, and some elastic, and a sewing machine, and they can have at it. And I just want to thank, really, seriously, hundreds of people who have called about this project. We should have collected, as of today, approximately 2,000 masks, and they're not just from Evansville and the surrounding area. We thank them totally. But I've received calls from probably 40 different states of people wanting to help with this particular project or trying to find out how they can start a project like this in their area.
So what's the protocol? You said you've got patterns. There are specific, you know, materials that need to be used. But then how do you worry about cleaning and sanitation? Or do you give these masks to the facilities and then they do that?
That is exactly what we do.
Is that what happens?
We take them to the facilities, and the facilities actually take care of sanitizing or cleaning these masks. And really, that's why it's so important that these chemo patients get more than one mask. I mean, they'd like to have, of course, their caregiver or the person that's with them, if they have someone with them, you know, to have a mask also. But if not, them themselves would like to have more than one so that they can care and treat and clean that particular mask when they have to wear the next one.
And we know that a lot of people are frustrated with the feeling of wanting to help, but having to find a way to do so within their own four walls. We're being told to stay home. But mask making is something that totally qualifies if you know how to use a sewing machine and you got a few things laying around that qualify. And this is something you can do from your couch, right?
That is exactly right. But I also have to say that we've had corporations step up to the plate. For instance, Toyota Indiana called, and they happened to have 353 feet of muslin that they had made on their loom in the Toyota Visitor Center. And they wanted to donate it to make masks. Can you imagine? I mean, how wonderful is that? You know, and right up the road, there's a band shop that was making band uniforms, and they wanted to keep their people employed. So they switched over to making masks, and they're producing for us between 500 and 800 a couple of times a week.
All right. Here's your chance to plug the website again.
It's chemobodybuddies.org, and we want to make sure that people go there if they want the pattern. They go there if they want more information. And, of course, we can always use funding. We appreciate it, and we appreciate everyone's generosity as we're going through this time. And just to keep in mind, whenever Chemo Buddies gets up and going again, that we're going to need your help even more. So thank you, and thank you for talking with us today.
Thank you, Gail Williams, Executive Director of Chemo Buddies in Evansville, Indiana. And we wish you and your team the best.
Thank you so much.
I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back now highlighting some of the efforts happening across the state to help provide relief to communities while we battle the coronavirus. There's been plenty of comparison between what it takes to fight a pandemic and what it takes to fight a war. American businesses have a tradition of converting their production to meet immediate needs during those crucial times. And recently we've seen a lot of businesses do just the same. Three Rivers Distillery Company in Fort Wayne, Indiana, is one of the many distilleries across the state that have altered production to start producing hand sanitizer rather than the typical spirits you'd find there. And joining us now to talk about how her distillery has made the conversion is the president of Three Rivers Distillery Company in Fort Wayne, Indiana, Marla Schneider. Marla, thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
So can you first introduce us to Three Rivers Distillery Company? We know that you guys are based up in Fort Wayne. If someone comes to visit during normal times, what can they expect?
Sure. So we are Fort Wayne's only distillery. We are the first distillery since Prohibition in the area. And on a typical operating day, you can expect to see about six of our employees working either in the office or on the production floor, distilling and kind of doing the day-to-day there. And then we also have a tasting room and a huge patio attached. So we do full a full restaurant, dinners, appetizers, and we have a craft cocktail bar that's attached to the distillery. And then we recently, I believe, were the first distillery in Indiana to obtain a beer and wine permit and attach that to our artisan distilling license.
So signature cocktails, can you give me an example? I'm getting thirsty.
Sure. Yeah. Our most popular cocktail is the Heaven and Hell. And what that is we have a jalapeno vodka that has a medium heat to it. And we make that with a combination of raw and charred jalapenos. So it has a really nice, smoky, medium heat flavor. And then the Heaven and Hell cocktail, we use that vodka. And we put passion fruit, a little bit of lemon juice, and it's our most popular kind of sweet and spicy cocktail that we have.
What about a signature spirit? What are you known for?
Our bourbon is our most popular, but I think what we're most well known for in Indiana is our rye whiskey. It's the Franklin B. Rye Whiskey, and it's very popular. We have a bourbon society here in Fort Wayne, and they tell us that it's one of the best, or if not the best, craft rye whiskeys that they've ever tried.
So then how has coronavirus changed business as usual for you all?
It's changed a lot. I mean, we had to furlough our restaurant employees, unfortunately, and shut that down. We tried to do carry out for about a week, and it just wasn't successful for us. We're not typically known for carry out. So that was kind of a hard shift for us to go into and get that out there. And we, you know, quickly kind of moved into doing hand sanitizer. Thinking initially, well, we'll just, you know, we'll create some hand sanitizer and donate it to the community, and we'll still keep distilling our vodka and our bourbon and our rye whiskey, and, you know, just add this into our production schedule, and we'll be able to manage that. And then we quickly learned that there was such a demand for hand sanitizer that we had to make a decision. It was an easy decision for us to go ahead and shut down production for our normal operations, so, you know, making the bourbon and the vodkas and all of that. And we just shifted and pivoted right into 100% making hand sanitizer. So that's been, you know, a lot of work in a very short period of time, but we've been able to keep up with it and figure out how to kind of stagger shifts with our staff so that we're not, you know, we're practicing social distancing within our operation too.
Now, I've heard when it comes to distilleries making hand sanitizer, and there are a few across the country who are doing it, that for a little bit, it seemed like the term hand sanitizer was sort of not allowed, and they were saying hand cleaner as opposed to hand sanitizer. Do you know anything about that distinction?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, when we first started, there wasn't, we knew that, you know, to create quote unquote hand sanitizer, you had to be FDA approved. And I don't think any of us were necessarily FDA approved. So we were making hand cleaner. And then, you know, within a day or two after we started making the hand cleaner, the FDA loosened the regulations. The TTB, which is our regulating body for alcohol production, said that we were able to do this. And so we've been following the FDA, the TTB, and the World Health Organization regulations to make hand sanitizer, which they've loosened those so that we can, you know, call it such now.
And as I understand it, hand sanitizer has to have at least 60% alcohol. Yours is 80%?
Typically, it is 60%. The new recommendations with the crisis is a minimum of 80% for ethanol solution. And then if you're using isopropyl alcohol, the minimum is 75%. So yes, we're doing 75% if we're using isopropyl and 80% if we're using ethanol.
And is it typical? I mean, is it, I guess, comparable to, say, the Purell or the Germex that you could find? Is it sort of that gel, or is it something else?
It's as far as consistency, no. It's more of the consistency of water or a cleaning spray. So a spray bottle works really well with it. It does not have that gel, and that's, you know, due to the recipe that we are forced to follow. When we were making hand cleaner in the beginning, we were trying to get that gel consistency. But then once the regulations came out and we had to follow a specific recipe, it's more of the consistency of water.
So are people purchasing it, or are you donating it? You said you were planning to give some to the community. How's it working?
Yeah, we are 100% donating it to the community. It's our understanding that because we're not FDA approved, we cannot sell it retail. But I don't know that we would in this case anyways. This is something that we feel really strongly about, donating and giving back to the community in this time of crisis. And we've had so many people donate to us through our GoFundMe account or donating in kind. Our graphic designer donated their time to design the label. So there are so many people and so many, you know, generous hearts out there that are giving back to us as well, that this is something we would 100% donate.
How long did it take to get all of your equipment converted and everything off the ground?
We really did not have to convert any equipment for this. So it's basically that we're just distilling high proof alcohol into a neutral grain spirit. So it's ethanol and isopropyl alcohol are the two types of alcohol that you get off of the still based on the cut. And we just distill it a really high proof. And so there was really no conversion necessary with our own equipment. And then it's following the recipe to mix that alcohol with inactive ingredients that are required. And that's kind of the only thing that we had to seek out were PPE, so the personal protective equipment, handling some of the inactive ingredients and making sure that we were doing that appropriately and protecting our team when they were mixing everything together.
So how much does it cost then for you to make the hand sanitizer?
It's depending on the alcohol that we're using, it's anywhere between $12 to $15 a gallon for us to produce it. And that's just with materials, that does not include labor.
And are you still making some right now?
Yes. Every day we're making some as much as possible. The challenge at the moment is sourcing the raw materials. So it's, you know, that basically is what I do all day long. I call industries to see if they have any materials, any of these ingredients that they can donate to us, because oftentimes we're either unable to order them or the lead time is a week out. So it's definitely a, you know, kind of a race to get these materials in so that we can keep producing.
Are you still making spirits that people can drink, or is it all hand sanitizer now?
It is, for us, it is all hand sanitizer right now. We're a small operation, so we weren't, you know, creating a ton. Our equipment, the capacity on our equipment doesn't allow for us to do, you know, enough where we can produce both at the same time. So we're 100% hand sanitizer.
Have you gotten feedback from the community?
Oh, it's overwhelming response of positivity, you know, gratefulness, thankfulness. It really warms our hearts and, you know, kind of it's humbling to see how people are reacting and stepping up and kind of being cheerleaders for us in the community.
And so you said that people have been giving to your GoFundMe to help support this effort, but if people want to support you, they can also buy your spirits. Can people still buy those? Are they in liquor stores around the area?
They are. So we're in Meijer stores across Indiana, locally Target stores as well, and then our two favorite local liquor stores here, which is Belmont Beverage and Cap and Cork.
Marla Schneider is the president of Three Rivers Distilling Company in Fort Wayne, Indiana. They're making hand sanitizer for the community. Thank you so much for the work that you and your team are doing, and thanks for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you so much.
And now we're turning our attention to another effort in Fort Wayne, lifting a different kind of spirits. Alan Helms is an event organizer with Fort Wayne Bar Aid, a digital effort to give local musicians and artists the chance to continue performing for the area for both select from both select venues and sometimes even their couch. Alan Helms is with us now. Alan, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having us.
So concerts across the country are being canceled or postponed for the foreseeable future. That goes for everything from the big stadium gigs to dive bar gigs. But Fort Wayne Bar Aid's still providing that creative platform for artists. Can you tell us how this idea got started and how it works?
Well, the idea stemmed from the farm aid that, you know, a lot of musicians came together to help the farming community. And, you know, obviously one of the very first people to be impacted from this COVID-19 shutdown was our local music venues and our bartenders and servers and everybody who relies on those tips to be able to make a living and pay their bills.
And so given the social restrictions right now, these shows are being streamed online and people can watch them. Where can they see them?
Yeah, we created a virtual venue for the performers to showcase their talents and to help raise money for our local community. And you can find that we have a Fort Wayne Bar Aid Facebook page, but most of the performances are taking place in the Fort Wayne Bar Aid Benefit Facebook group that we have. That's where you can actually go and watch the performances, and it's all free to watch, and you can donate after if you so feel desired.
And who do those funds that people donate benefit?
So besides the performers that we have coming from home, we also have 10 live music venues that host typically host music shows during, you know, a regular season that are involved in it. And all the money gets divided evenly amongst all the employees of those live music venues right here in our community.
What kind of response have you gotten from the community so far?
Well, it's been, honestly, it's just been absolutely overwhelming. The idea came about between a few selective people probably a little over a week ago. And from idea to concept to launching happened within just a few days. And we've had hundreds and hundreds of bands locally, regionally, nationally, and even internationally that have already participated in this event to help us raise money. And we actually also have a sister group up in South Bend, Indiana, called the Michiana Bar Aid that has jumped on board in conjunction with us and is also doing this program.
So who's performing?
We have all kinds of different genres of music performing in the group. We had a guy from New Zealand last night who did a jazz classic rock. We have country. We have rock and roll. We've got heavy metal. We've got, you know, Americana. We've had Becca Bretta out of Detroit, Michigan, performed for us probably 3 or 4 days ago. We've got Joey Lamping here locally. So, I mean, the artist has just been overwhelming, flooding. We're getting more every single day, and more people just keep performing.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're getting people that would otherwise be found around Fort Wayne, but you're also getting people who might never make their way to Fort Wayne for any reason.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of these artists are actually people who have at some point lived in Fort Wayne, but have now moved on to other parts of, you know, the country or even the world.
So what is the music scene like in Fort Wayne?
The music scene in Fort Wayne has always been really good. It's always been solid, especially the live music scene. But I think this is an opportunity for not only artists and venues, but for the entire community to come together and make it even stronger.
You know that it's a bit different than for the artists to not have a crowd in front of them. So have you heard from any of the performers as to what that's like, whether that's weird or whether it's good in some way?
Actually, we have. You know, it definitely is different. You know, an artist does kind of feed off of a crowd. There's a couple different aspects of that. It's good for them to feel comfortable in their craft without having to have that feedback, and they can still see that feedback live while they're performing with all the hearts and the comments and the shares, because a lot of these artists are actually interacting live with their people and their fans online while they're performing.
And how often are these digital performances happening?
They're happening every single day.
I mean, this is a great idea to get some folks some economic support, of course, but do you hear from anybody who is just thankful that they have a little bit of distraction right now?
Oh, yeah. If you go into the Facebook group itself, you can actually see that, or any of the performances you go and follow. I think it's definitely a positive distraction in a time where there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of worry. A lot of the artists definitely do provide a lot of, we've had some of them that even name their performances like a peace and calming session.
And you've got to be a music fan, I guess, to be behind all these efforts. Why did you want to help people in this particular way? And you're a music promoter, so this means something to you.
Absolutely. I think it was wanting to make sure that not only did we support the live music scene that's already strong here in Fort Wayne, but we wanted to make sure that all of these performers have some place to return to once we make it through the end of this crisis.
I would imagine some people who either can't or don't usually get out to see live music is seeing a lot more with the streams on Facebook and what you're providing as well. If they're interested in checking out your lineup and tuning into a show, where can they find you?
You can find us at the Fort Wayne Bar Aid Benefit Facebook group, and also at the Fort Wayne Bar Aid Facebook page. And those are the two best places to find us. You can also find several different individual events that are venue-sponsored events on the Facebook page, to where you can follow each event specifically, or you can just hang out in the group and watch live performances happen randomly every day and get a notification.
Alan Helms is an event organizer for Fort Wayne Bar Aid. We're so glad to have you with us, Alan, and best of luck in the coming weeks.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
And if you're interested in learning more about any of the local efforts we talked about today, we'll have links and contact information listed on our web post today. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Adam Gross. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Subscribe so you always know what we're talking about, and catch up if you have some extra time these days. Join us tomorrow when we'll talk about getting outside, something that you can still do. We're on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. In the meantime, I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.